This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Six candidates want to be the Democratic nominee to take on Republican Congressman Fred Upton this fall. George Franklin spent a large part of his career as an executive for Kellogg. He was also a Western Michigan University trustee, and now he would like to serve in the United States Congress. George Franklin, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
So tell our audience about yourself, those who don't know you. Reintroduce yourself, perhaps, to those who do, and tell us why you would like to be the representative for the 6th Congressional District.
Sure. Well, let me why I'd like to be the representative is I think it's time for a change, and we need a new tone, a new direction in Washington. And I pride myself, and I've been involved in this community for 30-some years, and I pride myself on making a difference. And my goal is to make sure, running for office, that everybody gets a fair shot. That's all people want. And I tell the story about a young guy when I was working on the special subcommittee on labor in the House of Representatives. I was in college. And a fella came in, blue-collar guy, and he said, can you help me get a job? And I was sort of befuddled, right? I'm alone in the office, just man in the place. And I said, excuse me? He said, well, isn't that what you're here to do? And I went, you need to go down, like I hesitated, hawed, and I explained to him, well, you need to go down to the District of Columbia and employment office and this kind of thing. And he left there, and he's always been in my memory because he didn't ask for an exemption, a special preference, a special provision. The guy just wanted a fair shot. And I believe that's what people want, whether you're white, black, gay, straight, whatever your walk of life, people want a fair shot, and I don't think they're getting it now. And I think my experience, my background, I've spent a lifetime making things happen, I think, and I think I can go to Washington and make a difference, and that's why I'm running.
So who isn't getting a fair shot right now, and what do you do as a member of Congress to ensure that they do get a fair shot?
Well, I think working people, their wages, incomes, working conditions. I think people concerned about the environment. We have a situation now where the Republican administration has turned the EPA into an attack on the environment as opposed to an entity there to protect it. I think the LGBTQ community, they deserve equal treatment, equal protection, dignity, and respect. I think the African American community is not being the Voting Rights Act. There's discrimination, and I think it's time for a change and for some people to stand up and make a difference.
So I have to ask you at this particular time about guns with all of the discussion after the shooting in Florida. What measures would you favor to regulate guns, for instance, ban assault weapons?
Absolutely. Let me tell you, I'll rattle off three real quick. Ban assault weapons. Put in a red flag provision so that judges can intervene when we have these clearly disturbed people that shouldn't be allowed to have guns or have guns taken away. And I think you need to close the domestic abuse loopholes. There's definitions that go back from 20 years ago about how judges can take away and prevent guns from domestic abusers. Well, the definition of who that is covered and what it entails, it need to be modernized for the American family. I mean, Gordon, this is sheer madness that a 19-year-old kid can walk into a store, buy a semi-automatic assault-type rifle, and walk out. It's madness. And I just read today that the Republicans have announced, the Republicans in the House, they are going to do nothing regarding guns. It's the headline of the Detroit Free Press. They said, we're going to investigate the police and how they reacted. Give me a break. Give me a break. A 19-year-old kid can walk in and buy an assault weapon. It's a military-type weapon. It has no business out on the streets in any way, shape, or form. And someone's got to stand up. And the Republicans in the House, they're just lapdogs for the NRA, right? Well, someone's got to stand up to the NRA and say, we've had enough, and do something about this.
Would you say a shotgun should be the most powerful weapon that someone should be allowed to own, or where would you draw the line?
You know, I'm not sure exactly where I draw the line. I don't claim to be any expert on guns. I know assault weapons aren't supposed to be out there, semi-automatic. You know, you can't own a bazooka, right? I mean, that's not legal. So you got to draw the line somewhere, but it clearly isn't drawn at the right place. I mean, sure, people ought to have shotguns. You can carry handguns. No one's attacking the Second Amendment. But, you know, actually, I'm the only lawyer in the race on either side. And I'm sick of hearing all this about the Second Amendment, that. The Second Amendment does not cover people carrying military-type weapons on the streets, period.
You mentioned a red flag law. There's a lot of, you know, discussion about this. Kind of give us the process here, because there is, I suppose, the potential that someone could get, you know, accused of something that may be out of bounds. How would you ensure someone's due process rights through that
process? Well, that's why you have judges, and that's why you have to have probable cause. So you would need to go to a judge. You would need to show probable cause for having this person either a gun removed or banned from owning a gun. But that's the judge of a, that's what judges do. And we need a law that allows judges some discretion to intervene. If you read practically all these cases, people knew these kids had problems. They knew they were disturbed. They were doing strange things, yet nobody could do anything about it. So instead of intervening after the fact, we've got to be able to intervene before these incidents occur. And the only way to do it is empower judges to make those kind of decisions. That's what they're paid to do.
Thoughts on arming teachers?
Ridiculous. I'm with the MEA.
Let me ask you about some other things. You say that we need a big investment in infrastructure. How would you pay for that?
Yeah. I mean, the difficulty is with this last tax bonanza for the rich, we went $1.5 trillion in debt. So the money that should have been there for infrastructure is now being given away in tax benefits to people that didn't want it, and some of them didn't need it or want it. There's a couple options. You can do what's called P3, public-private partnerships, where you privatize. Problem with that is it really hasn't proven that successful in the places that it's been done, and it's more expensive because the bonds are more expensive if you go to the private market. So I think what we need to do is reprioritize our budgeting in Washington to start spending on things that are needed as opposed to some of the ways it's being spent now. You know, the military, for instance, there was a report a couple years ago, you know, by their own admission, they're talking about, you know, $100 billion in waste in the Defense Department. Well, that's a lot of roads and bridges, right? That's a lot of roads and bridges. And that they're talking about a military budget of $716 billion coming up in 2 years, I think it is. But, you know, we need to reprioritize where we're spending money. We need to spend more money on education. We need to spend more money on infrastructure. And when you're talking about the security of the United States, I think we're going to be a more secure country by spending our dollars wisely than wasting it in areas that it's not needed.
Specifically on infrastructure, you mentioned roads and bridges. Would you also want to see more public transit developed? You know, water infrastructure is all that
absolutely.
Part of it?
You know, in the 6th Congressional District, we've got all these harbors that need to be routinely maintained. And so, yeah, it runs the gamut. It's taken it, and it's in environmental, it's economic, it's jobs. It runs the gamut. So, yeah, I would cover those also.
You favor a public option for healthcare. Explain how that would work.
I favor first of all, I'm for universal coverage. And how I've been approaching it is I want to get the quickest way from here to there. The quickest way to get universal coverage is to begin by improving Obamacare. We need to reinstate the individual mandate, which ironically, you know, was a Republican idea from the 90s. And make people responsible for themselves and their own health insurance. We need to up the reinsurance program so that the insurance companies can keep their rates low to cover more people. And I'm with Senator Stabenow on expanding the Medicare coverage to down to age 55, which is a quick, easy way to expand things. So it's an evolving issue, but we got to get it back stabilized where it was before the Republicans took over, and then we evolve from there to grow it, develop it, expand it, and so on. But I want to get the fastest way from here to there.
Okay, universal coverage. Is a public option a better way to do that than a single-payer healthcare system?
I'm open.
Open to single-payer?
Yeah, well, I'm open, yeah. I'm open to all the options, really. And I guess what I hesitate on, Gordon, is putting these labels, because when you write the legislation, I mean, I'm the only one in this race that's been in a legislative body, okay? And so you whip these terms around, but what does it mean when you put pen to paper? What does that entail? So I'm hesitant to say public option, single payer. I want everybody to get health care coverage. I want them to get it as quickly and as comprehensively as possible. And to do that, you have to do it in a politically feasible way. And so that's my approach, because the working people in Bangor, they don't care what you call it. They just want health care coverage.
But a public option would mean that people could opt to go into Medicare
or something like that. And I said I'm open to all those.
Specifically for agriculture, this is an issue that's on your website. You say that farmers are really hurting. What would you specifically do, or what do you think that Congress needs to do to make life better for farmers?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is an ag district, okay? Farm income is down over half from about 5 years ago. 80-some percent of the farmers in this country require a second and some a third job to make ends meet, okay? What we have to do is bolster exports of corn, soybeans, specialty crops, and the like. It's interesting, people talk about trade. Well, Mexico is already retaliating because of the language coming out of the Trump administration on corn coming in. We sell $18 billion a year worth of ag products to Mexico. Well, Mexico is now buying corn from Argentina. They are buying soybeans from Brazil. We're not the only game. And so I've spent a lot of my career actually moving around the world, getting tariffs reduced so we could export American corn to different countries. So we've got to lower entry barriers for our products, expand foreign markets, and while we keep a safeguard underneath the farmers with the farm program, which needs to be reauthorized this year.
What, in your mind, would be a sensible policy on immigration?
Well, first of all, let me just say on DACA, they stay here, they become citizens, and they move on with their life. That's what you do there, okay?
Become citizens, do they have to meet some criteria in there? For instance, you know, what if they're convicted of a crime?
I mean, there are a few limitations, but basically these are good, decent people that are working here that many of them have never been to the country they're talking about sending them back to. It's almost inhumane. DACA, barring some felony or whatever, you stay here, they become citizens, and they move on with their life. Immigration, sure, you need secure borders, but you don't need a wall. And I have told people I will never vote for any bill in any way, shape, or form that has anything remotely with a wall in it. And I make it analogous to if you had voted for Japanese internment camps because there was an appropriation tied to it, could you live with yourself for the rest of your life? And I say no. This is such a scar on this country. If we were to build a wall to keep people out. You know, the East Germans did that in Berlin, right? What a signal that was for the world. And here we are thinking about doing it. Absolutely no way, ever.
Back to DACA for a moment.
Yep.
You mentioned, you know, these kids came here when they were very young, but often with family members who were not so young and came here without proper authorization,
right.
Were not documented. What happens to the parents of those young people?
You allow them to stay. I mean, It is just so mean-spirited what people are doing. It's mean-spirited, unnecessary, and counterproductive. All right? I'm not going to divide families. Have a 13-year-old gets to stay here and mom and dad go back to wherever. I mean, it's just inhumane. And we need to be a, you know, there's that lady in the harbor in New York, right? We need to go back and take a look at that. That's who we are. That's what we're all about. And, you know, we've lost that in this. You know, I was at an event the other night, and what really worries me, a lot of these things worry me, but that, you know, we're going into a dark period. I mean, we're becoming people I don't even recognize anymore. And that's not who we are. And I think a lot of this election is we need to say, who are we as a people? I mean, what do we want to represent? And building walls, that isn't it. Splitting up families, that's not us. And that's what this election's about. Who do we want to really be?
You mentioned the EPA a bit ago.
Yeah.
What would be your dream scenario for how the United States, at least, if not other countries in the world, would be addressing climate change?
Well, I mean, you've got to attack it at its root. It's the number one environmental issue of the world, okay? And the whole fossil fuel issue, we need to move away to alternative sources of power. And we need to do it as quickly as we can. So, and I'm also one that people say, good environmental law is good business law. I used to love to tell people, Gordon, I was the head of government affairs for Kellogg Company for 25 years. And I always tell people, I have no idea when people say pro-business what they're talking about. That means nothing. And I like to use the example that if the EPA came to Michigan and told Consumers Power, you got to put scrubbers on all your smokestacks, you can't burn coal, you got to do this, you got to do that. You know, they'll scream like stuck pigs, this is anti-business, we got to raise the rates, you're going to lose jobs, it's terrible. If you make wind turbines in Muskegon, it's pro-business. So I don't buy it when I hear people saying the environmental regulation and it results in loss of jobs, loss of business. I just don't buy it because it isn't true. And good environmental law is good business.
Campaign finance.
Yep.
What sort of changes do you think we need to the current system?
We need to scrap it. We need to scrap it. And the current campaign finance law was passed in 1974, the Federal Election Campaign Act of 1974. And it was meant to address the ills, the evils of Watergate. And it set up the PACs, okay? And then over, I don't know, what's been 74, what's the math, 50 years, let's say, through a series of court cases, decisions, amendments, and so on, it's now morphed into this monstrosity, Citizens United and the like, that no one ever envisioned when this was passed. The Federal Election Commission is a joke, okay? It does nothing, okay? You report to them, but they don't enforce anything. They have no bearing. And the law needs to be scrapped, totally revisited, and start over again. And we have to respect the First Amendment. But once again, I think you can draft legislation that curtails the power of these interest groups who collectively overly influence elections. And still do it in a constitutional manner.
Well, speaking of money raised, you have raised a fair amount for this race. So have a couple of the other Democrats who are running. And, of course, right. Congressman Upton will be well-funded for his reelection campaign. Is there too much money in this particular congressional race?
There's too much money in every congressional race. And I'm raising the money so I can win, okay? You need the money to win. You need the money to communicate. As you and I were talking before the radio, this is a lot of geography. This typical congressional district's about 700,000 people. This is six counties. It's got two media markets. And in order to communicate and compete, you need money. Do I find it healthy? No. Do I wish I didn't have to do it? Yes. But that's the reality. But what I do want to do is win this race and go to Washington and take my experience of getting things done, just, as I said before, I think you ought to scrap it and start over is what we need to do.
You're running and hoping to face Fred Upton in the fall, and you're hoping to defeat him and go on to Congress.
Yeah.
A couple of your Democratic opponents have raised the question of why you were contributing money to Congressman Upton not that long ago.
Yeah. No, I was an advocate on behalf of different groups, and I'm very proud of who are represented. You know, political contributions are part of building bridges, advancing the cause, establishing relationship, which is your responsibility. Am I proud of representing the University of Michigan Cancer Center and getting millions of dollars? Absolutely. Am I proud of working for the International Food Protection Training Institute that keeps your food safe every day? Absolutely. Am I proud of working for the National Network of Depression Centers that addresses mental illness around the country? You better believe it. But it's back to what I said. It's part of a process that's unhealthy, and I would like to see the whole thing revisited.
No, you donated to Congressman Upton in 2015 and 2016, correct?
Right.
Yeah. You say that he has turned right. I mean, was he different in 2015 and 2016, or did you already have concerns about him, but you were still making contributions?
Yeah. You know, I mean, because you make a contribution to someone doesn't mean you agree with everything they're doing. And, you know, he's a good person, okay? I'm not getting into the politics of personality here, which some people are. I worked with his office. He's a good person. I just realized that at some point, if you're going to go out and vote for Paul Ryan to be the speaker, it's just not acceptable anymore. We need a fundamental change. I'm like a lot of people. I got up after the election last November and said, you know, I'm sorry. We just got to change the overall direction. And that's what I'm attempting to do. And the way we do that is flipping 24 seats. Senator Levin came out to support me, which, by the way, I've been endorsed by Governor Blanchard, Governor Granholm, Mark Schauer, Senator Carl Levin. These are all people that know me. They know my values. They know who I am. They know my role in Democratic politics. Senator Levin came out, and he said, George, what we need is a check somewhere, a check and a place to provide some balance. And the only place that can be accomplished right now is the House. It's, you know, hopefully the Senate, but unlikely. So we have this Trump administration in the White House. We have Republican control of the House and Senate, and they have the judiciary. So the most important thing any of us will do if we win will be done in about 15 minutes. We're going to walk out on the House floor and vote for a Democrat to be the speaker and flip it the majority. That's what we need to do. And we need to make sure our candidate is someone that can win this district. That is something. And in the past, I don't think we've been out talking about the right things to the right people. You mentioned ag. Well, we got to talk ag. We got to talk ag where ag's important. And I have a background in agricultural issues. I've testified in front of the Ways and Means Committee on ag issues. In my Kellogg life, I've dealt with about corn tariffs around the world. So it's something I'm comfortable doing. It's something I can do. And I think I can take this race to places we haven't been before and help flip it.
You mentioned Senator Levin, former Governor Blanchard and Granholm, former Congressman Mark Schauer. You know, as I talk to Democrats and maybe see some of the back and forth on Facebook, I get a sense out there that there's a lot of people who really want to shake things up, and they may kind of view someone like Carl Levin as the establishment. You know, are you the guy to shake things up if you go to Washington?
Absolutely. Look at my record. Yeah, what gets me is I hear a lot of people talking. They talk about what they're for and against. Well, what have they done? What have they done? Gordon, you might remember when I was on the board here, Dieter, who I think the world of, but he was wrong on this, he decided he was going to let out some bids on the athletic facilities, non-prevailing wage. Right. Well, I stood up with Lana Boldy of the UAW, and we took him on. We took him on because, one, it was wrong, and two, we told Dieter it's illegal. So we took him on. We eventually won. It went to the Supreme Court, Michigan Supreme Court, and was determined that they should have paid prevailing wage. But I've got a record when people talk about environmental. When Elson was president, I was one of the four or five people that negotiated the deal that created the Asylum Lake Preserve between the engineering school, College of Aviation, and the environmental community. So we have this 274-acre gem that I was part of help creating. when you talk about criminal justice, I worked with Judge Schmay in the 90s to get the funding to create the drug courts, okay? Drug courts have literally saved people's lives, okay? So I hear people talking. I want to know what people did in these different areas, and I'm proud to stand up in any sector you want and talk about what I've actually done as opposed to just what I'm for and against.
You state on your website and some of your campaign materials that you're not a career politician. Of course, nobody else on the Democratic side of this race is. Nobody has held elected office. But you were a lobbyist. And
yeah.
To some people, they're going to look at lobbyists as being not a whole lot better and maybe in some ways worse than being a career politician.
Yeah.
What's your answer to that?
I'm very proud of what I did as a lobbyist. I helped create and save jobs. I helped fund cancer research. I helped, as I said, National Network of Depression Centers. I've been active, involved, making a difference, getting things done. And I know how this system works. I can go to Washington and accomplish things that I don't think my competitors can just because of my experience and background. And I'm very proud of who I am and what I've done.
This is the first time that I can remember a Democratic primary in the 6th Congressional District that had more than one candidate. Usually
there is no competition.
One Democrat, and as some people have said, often they had to find somebody who was willing to run. I want to read this quote here from a story in the Kalamazoo Gazette. The thought among many people is that factor in particular makes Congressman Upton more vulnerable than he has in the past. That's from Mark Miller, who is chair of the 6th District Democratic Party. He adds, however, I have to say we've said that before. So I guess the question to you is, how do you cash in on the idea that Fred Upton may be vulnerable if you are the Democratic candidate? What sort of campaign do you run that actually does produce a winner for the Democrats in the 6th Congressional District?
Well, I think there's a lot of people just think it's time for Fred to move on. He's been there 30-some years. He's the former chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee. A lot of people thought he was going to either run for the Senate or retire. I was hoping he'd retire. And I think there's a lot of people just realize we need a new direction. And one of the reasons I'm running is, once again, unless we can get a majority in the House, the Democrats, we can't really implement fundamental change, which is needed. And we can't provide a new tone, which is needed. And I think I've had a lot of sort of what's left of moderate Republicans and a lot of independents come to me and say, you know, George, we can support you. It's time for a change. And the other one I use, and I'm not claiming I'm Doug Jones, okay, so don't say this, but in Alabama, all right, sure, Doug Jones ran against this fellow Moore who was carried all sorts of baggage.
Fred Upton has a little less baggage than
Roy
Moore.
I'm not implying that at all. But what I'm saying is you need to give people a candidate they can go to, that there's a comfort level. And I'm of the school to win this race. We can't just as Democrats, so we're all Democrats going to turn out and we're going to win. This is a lean Republican district. You've got to give them a candidate that there's a comfort level that, you know, we can go over there and try that. That's okay. We can put our toe in the water over there with this person. And I think I'm that person. Once again, my resume, my background, and my experience, I think I can get moderate Republicans and independents and give them a place to go.
You mentioned that you thought and had kind of hoped that Fred Upton would retire. If he had retired, would you still be running for Congress?
Yeah, because we have to win this seat. And I tell people, there's 6 of us. This is not about us. This isn't about George Franklin. This is about getting 24 seats. That's what counts, is winning this seat and being hopefully one of 24 so that the check and the balance that Senator Levin referred to is there. That's what this is about.
George Franklin is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Congress in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
George Franklin is one of 6 candidates who are seeking his party's nomination to challenge Republican Congressman Fred Upton in November. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.